Country Life on Midlands 103. Brought to you by W. Orshaw Burlington Business Park Tullamore, your main supplier of New Holland tractors in the Midlands. WORshaw.ie.
And it's Claire O'Brien sitting in this evening for the final time for MJ. He'll be back in this seat next week. Tonight, what will the farm of the future look like? Dr. Tom O'Dwyer of Johnstown Castle from Chagosk will be telling us about their event, which is happening on Tuesday, and it is called Technologies for Today and Tomorrow. It sounds like it's going to be really, really interesting. The Lamb Plus sale is on Saturday in Tullamore. It's always a big day. The Lamb Plus Elite Multi-Breed Eurostar Ram Sale is Ireland's largest catalogued ram sales. At the moment, there are about 450 eligible entries catalogued, so it's going to be a big event. And after 3 years, the Black Bull Thrashing Festival is back, and that is all to come on the programme. But as you know, if you're in farming at the moment, all the talk is about acres and acres and acres. Is it going to be acres of expense? And will the feedback, will the payback be worth it? Well, I'm joined on the line now by Darren Carty, who is Sheep and Schemes Editor with the Irish Farmers Journal. Darren, you're welcome to the programme.
Good evening, Claire.
This is your splash for tomorrow, which is that the new Agri-Rural Environment Scheme, the Acres Scheme, is going to see Western farmers benefit most, often at the expense of farmers here on the East. And here in the Midlands, of course, we kind of straddle both of those areas. Tell us what your research has really revealed.
Yes, Claire. So I suppose there's a few elements to it. One of the main questions we've been getting from farmers in recent weeks is about how they gain access to it. And in the last week is around how to put together a package of measures that would get a worthwhile payment. Now, by what I mean, a worthwhile payment is very easy to put down measures on paper. But what farmers are really interested in is, well, what money will they be left with in their pocket after they cover compliance costs? And a colleague of mine, Rachel O'Donovan, did a lot of work this week around talking with planners around what planning costs are going to be. So I suppose that's the first element. Chagas have said that their plans will cost from 450 euros upwards. Private planners have said that they cost somewhere between 600 and 800 is where they see it as, say, on average. And then obviously costs will reduce down in the second years. You mentioned about, say, maybe measures being different in the West and East. The reason, I suppose, it's going to benefit farmers most in the West is due to land type. So the measures in acres which give rise to the more, I won't say the highest payment, but give rise to the potential to hold onto a payment are land-based measures around grazing. So there's a couple of them. There's one is extensive grazing, and that's 200 euros a hectare per payment. There's results-based, say, grassland payments then around low-input grassland or low-input peatland. Payments there are anywhere from 200 to 450 euros a hectare. And then other options such as, say, for areas around, say, maybe Clare or Galway, where you have a high propensity of stone walls, that has the potential to equal them land-based area payments with regards, given a significant payment that won't have a very high cost of, say, compliance with it. Now, for say, your listeners, some will also be able to avail of those extensive grazing, say, measures. The other measures that probably a lot of farmers are having to look at is there's one there around tree planting, and that's really to try and get priority entry. But if you were to look at that on paper, and some of the suppliers and some of the contractors that do that work that we talked to this week, would say that to supply and plant a tree is coming in around 6 euros a tree, depending on what fencing is needed, and say to allow for some replacements from year one to year two, you're probably looking at a cost of somewhere between 8 and 11 euros per tree. So essentially, for that measure, you're handing over your first 2 years' payment on that measure.
You've been looking at this. I think the front page story and the huge amount of research that you've done over the last 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks at this stage around acres, when you look at it, is it going to be something that is going to put it bluntly, benefit farmers who are less productive over those who are, I suppose, making a full-time, full living out of farming?
On the face of it, it could look like that, but it's, for me, it goes back more so to land type, and it goes back to, say, what measures are applicable. Because I was talking to a farmer the other day, very highly stocked farmer who has over 100 hectares, but he also has some ground along the Shannon Callows.
Mm.
And while part of his farm is farmed very intensively, he said that he'll probably actually get the maximum payment. He was working it out. We were doing just a sort of case study with him. And he said that he will get about 6,800 without having, say, to put in a huge amount of investment in it. And that's just by the fact that he has access to some of that, say, callow land, which will get him a high payment. He'll get into that low input grassland, and he's probably get, say, 350 to 450 euros a hectare. And he sees that as a very, very valuable top-up to his income.
Of course.
Particularly because that farmer on the opposite side, under cap reform, and I know we're not talking about that this evening, but he stands to lose over 20,000 by cuts to his basic payment scheme over the next few years. So he said he has no option but to look and to make this work for his farm, or else he has a hole somewhere to the tune of 5,000 to 6,000. Now, look, he's one of the lucky farmers. As you said, there will be farmers that don't have that option. Yes, there will be farmers that look at other, say, options, maybe around planting new hedgerows, putting in riparian margins, but they will come with a cost of compliance. The other, I suppose, sector that won't fare too badly out of it, and there'll be a lot of listeners in your region, is tillage farmers, depending on their system. Now, I say that with a caveat, and I talked to Siobhan Walsh at Lint. This Siobhan is a colleague of mine and also a tillage farmer. And she said that if there is a lot of tillage farmers maybe that have gone down the route of minimum tillage, are sowing catch crops, or maybe doing things like leaving a small bit of, say, unproductive headlands unharvested. And for farmers that are doing those sort of measures, they could access a significant payment as well.
Okay.
But to go back to your original one, if you're to look at a dairy farm or a beef system that's operated at a very high stocking rate, well, then the potential for those farmers to get into as high a payment without succumbing to, or without they being willing to maybe take a hit on production, is definitely lower, all right.
Yeah, I suppose the other question is, well, I suppose really around tillage, isn't it? It's always going to be about risk. And, you know, when you look at a year like the year that we have at the moment, and some people obviously depending on you know, whether they're in malting or whether they're not in malting, and the kind of contracts that they have or the kind of prices that are available. Some people who have been able to take certain kinds of risks would be looking at the headlands and saying, you know, I don't know whether it's going to be worth my while putting headlands into a scheme like Acres when I, you know, I might be able to make more in the markets if that's how it's going to work out. It's always challenging, isn't it, for tillage farmers to have to make every year kind of risky decisions that maybe other enterprises don't have to.
That is exactly it. Because Siobhan is an example for me where she looked at, say, that if you were to take out 0.4 of a hectare, as say, and leave it as unharvested, that at the current grain price, that if you were to get 290 euros a tonne for that, well, then she said you would be no better off in with that measure in the scheme, because you'd actually end up succumbing that. Now, she said if it was 2 years ago, well, then you would have a nice top-up and it would be well worthwhile. So as you said, it's a case of sort of risk versus balance. And that's one of the big things I'm saying this week is that there's a lot of talk and a lot of, I suppose, maybe encouragement around Acres, a lot that... And when it was announced first, we were hearing all about the maximum payment for a general farmer is 7,300, the maximum payment for a farmer, say, in cooperation schemes is 10,000. Well, I'm simply saying to people is, look at the measures, scrutinise them closely, put down on the left-hand side of the page, right, this is what I stand to get from that, but put down on the right-hand side of the page, what the plan of appeal will be, what the cost of compliance is, and then do your decisions around that, because it's very easy to be attracted to the money. Like, if we're talking about 7,000 or 10,000, well, I know straight away it perks up my eyes and I get interested in it. But it really suits the farm, like, and it's, and even, like, I know we're saying that, say, it will suit the West, but even within regions, there'll be significant differences in that some farmers might be less extensive. There's some farmers that have contacted me and said that they're going to go organic and go into, get priority entry into acres, yeah, 4 acres as well, and that it suits their sort of choice of maybe they're moving on in life and they want just to reduce down a number. So it really is not a one-size-fits-all.
It's going to be an autumn of decisions for farmers, isn't it? Can I ask you then finally, just on your, on the, with your other hat on, the Hoggett price gap of up to 100 quid depending on the quality of Hoggetts. Are there buyers out there? We were I was watching the sale in Kilkenny the other day, and it was there weren't a lot of hands being raised in the ring.
No, I suppose it's look at definitely if you're down the East Coast at the moment, and if you're talking about store lands or talking maybe about Hoggetts, there might be, the hands mightn't be waving as much, because farmers are maybe holding off a bit due to feed supply issues. But in general, Hoggett sales haven't been affected by that too much, and they've been quite bright. Say, in sales held in the last week, you've seen good quality Hoggett selling in general sort of from 180 to 230. There's been some special sales, didn't like the Mayo Mule and Greyface sale in Ballinrobe. Half the Hoggetts and that sold from 200 to 250 euros. But if we're to take a step back from them special sales and look at, say, the normal sales, like Hoggetts being offered in Tullamore, Portumna, Roscrea, anywhere like that, there's a huge variation in that the top quality Hoggetts are hitting prices from 200 to 250. And then you have maybe lesser quality Hoggetts. The one auctioneer described to me is, well, they're a long way behind. They'll never make, say, good quality yours. It was his assessment on a few pins that sold for 150 to 160. But you also have a situation at the moment of Hoggetts maybe being offered at, or maybe a shortened feed because of the situation, yeah, the farmers are in, and that they're selling maybe from 150 to 180. So, but there is that big variation. But overall, sales aren't too bad.
Sales aren't too bad. Darren Carty, Sheep and Schemes Editor with the Irish Farmers Journal. Thank you so much for bringing us tomorrow's news today. It's great to have you on the programme, and we'll be talking to you again.
Thanks, Millie.
Thanks a lot. And that is Darren Carty. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it'll be Dr. Tom O'Dwyer we'll be chatting to. He is the head of the Signpost Programme at Teagasc, and he'll be telling us about their event that is happening on Tuesday. Technologies for today and tomorrow. What will the farm of the future look like? It will be fascinating. We'll have more interesting on the programme tonight. Country Life with me, Claire O'Brien, sitting in for MJ. We'll be talking about the past a little bit later on when we look at the 20th anniversary, 20 years since the Community Thrashing Festival first happened at Sharavogue, the Black Bull Festival. And of course, at that, they will have their working thrashing mill and the steam engine and the vintage display and all of that. And that is on Sunday. And on Tuesday, in Johnstown Castle, technologies for today and tomorrow is the topic of an open day. And I'm joined on the line now by Dr. Tom O'Dwyer to tell us all about it. Tom, you're welcome to the programme. What will farms... You're welcome. Thank you. What will the farms of the future look like? I suppose the challenge is in, you know, what we heard Darren Carty talking about there earlier on, balancing the productivity, balancing the profitability with the environmental sustainability requirements that are an increasing pressure on farmers today.
Yeah, I suppose just before I answer that question, just to make a link with your earlier comment there about past farming methods and traditions, I suppose farming has always evolved, and if we go back 40 or 50 years, we were farming, but we were farming with different technologies and different tools, different breeds of animals and so on. And likewise, if we look to the future, farming will have evolved again and will be somewhat different than the farming as we know it today or have known it for the last decade or two decades. Mm-hmm. So farming is always evolving. And to your question then, Claire, I guess, what will the farms of the future look like? I think that there will be a greater focus on environmental sustainability and trying to do the right thing by the environment, by looking after water quality, by enhancing biodiversity, and by doing what we can as farmers to reduce agricultural emissions from our farming activities. That's reducing greenhouse gas emissions and reducing ammonia emissions. And I suppose the focus of our event on Tuesday next is to showcase the technologies, the practices, the activities that are available for farmers to use now, today, on their farms to lessen the footprint of farming on the environment, and also to showcase the research that's ongoing at our research centre in Johnstown Castle that will bring forward technologies that will be available to farmers in the future.
You are involved in the Signpost programme, and when I read the description of that, it tells me it's a multi-annual campaign to lead climate action by all farmers. And when I look at that word lead there, it tells me that it's very different from the narrative that sometimes maybe that we're hearing at the moment. The idea is that you put yourself in the driving seat rather than being driven, possibly by policy. So talk to me about how that's going to become clear to people who attend on Tuesday.
Yeah, I suppose for me anyway, at least, and from my colleagues in Chagas, we believe that that previous Chagas research has identified a range of mitigation actions which, once applied by Irish farmers, can and will reduce greenhouse gas emissions from farming activities. We're absolutely confident in that. And our key focus in the Signpost programme is to work with our partners in the programme. We have over 60 partners in the Signpost programme, to work with all our partners and together to support and assist, motivate, encourage Irish farmers to take on those technologies. And yes, it's going to be a challenge, but you know, collectively we have to believe that we have the tools in place, and we have control of decisions that we can make voluntarily to change how we do things on our farm. So, for example, it's absolutely within any farmer's control to correct a soil pH deficiency. Take a soil sample. If the soil pH is low, lower than optimal for farming, you can correct that by the application of ground limestone.
Yeah.
And that will then allow you to reduce your fertilizer nitrogen application, and that's what reduces greenhouse gas emissions. So there is a job of work to educate, inform, empower farmers to take those decisions, to reduce the environmental footprint of the farming activities. And the good news, Claire, is for your listeners, is that many of the activities that can be taken, or actions that can be taken by farmers, can also benefit their pocket. They're what is called a win-win. They can both reduce the impact of farming on the environment, but they can also reduce the cost of farming or increase the profit accruing to the farmer. So, yeah, that's what we're about in the Signpost programme. And we'd like to work with farmers through our advisory service. But also for next Tuesday, we'll be showcasing and highlighting the various technologies and the steps that farmers can take. So that's a real reason for farmers to come along to Wexford next Tuesday.
Okay. So one of the very practical steps that farmers will be shown is about how to reduce losses of nutrients from the soil. Talk to me about that, and in a practical way, how that's going to work.
So in terms of nutrient losses, I suppose there's a couple of big ways where nutrients are lost, I suppose. One is directly from the farmyard. So, you know, if you have got inadequate slurry storage, or perhaps you're not catching all your soil water, nutrients are leaking away, through the loss of water or slurry from your farmyard. Or indeed, that might be equally having inadequate slurry storage and not being able to store the slurry until such time as land conditions are appropriate to apply the slurry to get best value from it. That's one. So that's all about looking at your farmyard, ensuring that you have the correct slurry storage and effluent storage facilities and so on in place. The second way that nutrients are lost then is through overland flow on the land itself. So, for example, if fertilizer is applied at the wrong time, in advance of a very heavy rainfall event, well, the fertilizer is applied and then it's washed away with the rain and it ends up in the local stream. And that's a cost to the farmer and it's also a cost to the environment. So again, you know, simple things like, you know, looking at the weather forecast and timing your fertilizer application correctly is important.
And is that there. One that you think farmers are not aware of?
No, I think farmers are aware of that. But perhaps there's some scope for improvement on certain farms. You know, the figures published by the Environmental Protection Agency in terms of water quality status suggest that, you know, we have an issue to address in terms of water quality. So, and no different to greenhouse gas emissions or ammonia emissions or the loss of biodiversity, we can talk about these at the national level, but ultimately, whatever position is reported at the national level is as a result of all the decisions taken by individual farmers up and down the country. So I believe that every individual farmer has a responsibility to look inside their own farm gate and to, maybe they probably will have to work with an advisor on this one, but to figure out what is the status of their farm in terms of the water quality in the local stream, the level of greenhouse gas emissions from their own farm, the level of biodiversity on their own farm. You know, so there's a number of environmental metrics or measures that farmers need to become more familiar with and become more aware of. And having measured the performance of their own farm, well, then the next step is, well, what can I do to improve that while still farming and producing high-quality food, as I always have done? And it might just mean some modification of your existing farming practices, some slight tweaks to what you do, or maybe the timing of what you do, or the management of certain fields on your farm, or the management of your stream boundaries, your buffer strips, and so on. You know, so advice is available and solutions are available. And I suppose what we're appealing to farmers is, now is the time to start engaging in discussions with your advisor or consultant or through your discussion group to try and figure out the steps that you can take on your farm. Now is the time for action, I guess, you know?
Yeah. So some of the topics covered there will be grass, clover and multi-species swards, fertilizer and slurry technologies, biodiversity and water quality, dairy and beef systems, the signpost project itself, as you said, and Chagas advisory and education, as well as machinery demonstration, which of course always draws a certain level of interest as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Tom O'Dwyer, thanks a million for talking to us tonight on the programme. The event is happening on Tuesday, kicking off at 10 o'clock. It is free, but you'd like people to book.
Yeah, the event is on Tuesday next in Johnstown Castle, County Wexford. So it's right down in the southeast of the country, as almost as far to the southeast as you can go. You know, so it's a journey, I suppose, for your listeners, Claire, but we think that it would be well worthwhile your listeners making the time on Tuesday next to travel to Wexford. Gates open for a 10 a.m. start. People are welcome to attend at any time after 10 o'clock. But we probably advise people to get there before probably 1 o'clock, because there is quite a lot to see. So, and if people want to book their ticket beforehand, that's advisable, but not necessary. Okay, we're not going to turn people away on the day.
Perfect. That's good to know. Good to know. Thanks a million for talking to us this evening.
Dr. Tom O'Dwyer
of Chagas, thanks so much. And there you have it. That is on Tuesday, kicking off at 10 o'clock at Johnstown Castle, which is always, of course, that part of the country. And there's an agricultural museum down there as well. Always worth a visit. I know two young men who were down there, two small boys who had a wonderful day at the Agricultural Museum. So it's not just one thing you might do over the day while you're down around Johnstown Castle. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be talking about the Lamb Plus Elite Multibreed Eurostar Ram Sale, which is happening on Saturday. Well, I know already today there was a great sheep sale in Tullamore Mart. I was hearing about it earlier on in the evening. But on Saturday, there's a very particular annual event that is happening, and that is the Lamb Plus Elite Multibreed Eurostar Ram Sale. It is the largest catalogued ram sale in the country, and I am joined on the line now by Eamon Wall of Sheep Ireland to tell us about it. Eamon, who is this sale for?
Thanks. First off, thanks for having me, Claire. But the sale is for, it's aimed at commercial sheep farmers. So any commercial sheep farmer should be attracted to the sale. We pride ourselves, I suppose, in publishing the sale as, or promoting the sale as a sale of the best genetics in Ireland. And we know that because we're gathering data on all the animals that are presented for sale on Saturday. So the breeders of those rams have been sending us data for throughout the year and across a number of years. So we've built up a picture of, I suppose, the best genetics in Ireland across different sheep breeds. And this sale is a great way, I suppose, of promoting those rams and getting them out to commercial sheep farmers from all around Ireland.
So the catalogue has closed its book at 423. Tell us, give us an idea of what's available, what's on offer, and who it's for.
Yeah. So I guess there's as you said, there's 423 rams in the final catalogue, and those rams are coming to us from over 100 ram breeders from all corners of Ireland. There's 9 different sheep breeds represented, mainly lowland breeds, and I suppose the strongest breeds within the sale are Texel, Charolais, Belfair and Suffolk, but we also have Hampshire Down rams, some Vendean rams, some Rouge rams, and some Border Leicester and Clyn rams as well.
Okay. So,
you know, there's a wide variety of breeds, and you know, often we get asked the question, you know, is it an expensive sale for farmers? But the sale has grown to such a size now. You know, there's really a ram for every budget and every farmer, I suppose, on the day. So that's why I guess it's become so attractive over the years, and I suppose look why we've seen such growth in it from year on year it has grown. It's running since 2012 now, and we've grown the sale year on year since then. So look, it's a great sign. So hopefully it'll still be attractive to farmers this coming Saturday.
And will everybody who goes on Saturday know exactly what they're looking for, and will everybody who's gone have looked at the figures and know exactly what it is they want?
Yeah, I suppose, look, the way the figures are designed there, you know, they're kind of designed to be as simple as possible.
Yeah. Very informative. Yeah,
look, it is. But we use the Eurostar system, I suppose, and the reason we use that is to keep it very simple. And it's the same system that's used in cattle, in beef. So, you know, there's a lot of crossover between beef and sheep and flocks. So, you know, it's kind of easy to understand, I guess, for the farmer that's, you know, maybe, look, not hugely up on the indexes or that. You don't have to be an expert in reading the information to kind of understand what's going on there. But, you know, we'll have plenty of staff available on the day for anyone that wants explanations and the information within the catalogue. But, you know, one key message that we always push to farmers is, you know, when using these indexes, that they're just an extra tool, I suppose, in terms of selecting a ram. We never advise farmers to select based on the index information only. Because the sheep still has to be physically correct and has to tick all the boxes from that point of view, you know. So it's important, you know, sometimes that message gets lost when farmers, I suppose, or when we talk about indexes, farmers maybe go away with the impression that we're advising, you know, that you can forget about the physical side of the ram purchase and just concentrate on the indexes alone. That's definitely not the message we want to get out there. So it's just an extra help, I guess, in terms of, you know, making your purchase, which is a very important purchase.
Well, it is, and I suppose as more and more sheep farmers are working on their own and they are less likely to have help, I suppose the lambing difficulty is one of the big criteria, isn't it, that people will be looking at?
Correct. Look, that's a major, I suppose, labour input on sheep farms and a major cost in sheep farms, you know, and that's a big proportion of our indexes, you know, are aimed at improving that trait and other key traits as well. And I suppose, look, that's the beauty of this information, you know, to try and select a ram to breed future replacements based on eye alone. You know, you'd never be able to select for, you know, improving those kind of traits because, I suppose, look, they're invisible traits. There's no physical kind of indicator of a ram that
might guide you in the right direction or the wrong direction, but at least, you know, this index information does help farmers to do that. So, you know, look, it's a great tool that's available to farmers, and it's one that we really encourage farmers to use when it is available. And I suppose look, the sale offers a great opportunity for farmers to pick up those type of land that tick both boxes, I suppose. From the physical side of view, you know, these rams are going to be, you know, look, excellent rams, and today they'll all be inspected by Sheep Ireland staff upon entry into the mart. So, you know, they'll go through a rigorous inspection on the way in, and then, you know, they've jumped over a lot of hurdles, I suppose, to make the sales catalogue as well, because we have a very strict entry criteria for the index as well.
I suppose one of the big decisions that, you know, that farmers make often, you know, obviously they're looking at the criteria, looking at the lambing and looking at, you know, the potential for putting on weight and the quality of the lamb, and you mentioned replacements as well. But also, I suppose one of the big questions is, do I buy a slightly older animal that is tested, or do I invest maybe in a younger ram? That's often something that people, I think, have a question about.
Yeah. Look, and I mean, traditionally ram sales, you know, it's ram lambs that are presented for ram sales. And I suppose, look, that's the case with this sale too. You know, the vast majority of rams in the sale are actually ram lambs.
Okay.
About 17% of the rams in the sale are hoggets, are 2-year-olds. And that's just the nature of the actual ram industry in Ireland. You know, the vast majority of rams are actually purchased as ram lambs. And I suppose from a genetic improvement point of view, there's benefit in that, you know, the generation interval is kind of short. You know, it's very quickly turning over. So if you're improving genetics, you know, you can make progress very, very quickly, because you have kind of, you know, a constant stream of new genetics going on stream. But certainly, look, sometimes you prefer older animals, and they can be catered for in the sales, because, as I said, you know, there is a good proportion of sale that are sold at hogget ram. So for anyone that is looking for an older animal, look, hopefully the sale will be able to cater for those too, you know.
Yeah. The sale itself takes place at Tullamore Mart at 11:30 on Saturday. Viewing starts at 9:30. So it'll be the not so much the tire kickers, but the people who'll be running their hands down the back and checking the confirmation and all the rest of it, they'll be all having a look around from 9:30. Where will they be able to access the catalogue? Is it available online, or will it only be in hard copy on the day?
Yeah, well, we'll have it on hard copy in the day, but it's available online as we speak, yeah. So for anyone that is interested, look, they can go to the Sheep Ireland website. They can just Google Sheep Ireland, they'll find that, or look up www.sheep.ie, and it's on our homepage there. It's the first thing you'll see, pretty much. So there's a PDF right there. But, you know, some people needn't be bothered and maybe about printing that. It's a fairly large catalogue. So, look, we'll have all those available on the day. So, I suppose they're the two best sources for it. And look, on Facebook and on our Twitter and things, where we've been promoting the catalogue. So anyone that's maybe more familiar with those media sources of media, maybe, you know, they can source it there as well.
What happened last year? Did the sale go ahead last year and the year before? I'm just thinking in terms of COVID and the impact that might have had, and, you know, whether people have bought replacement rams maybe in the last number of years in the way that they might have done previously.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I suppose COVID did stop a lot of things, but I guess, you know, sheep breeding had to continue, you know.
Yeah.
So look, so did the ram sales. So look, you know, breed societies and ourselves, everyone organised sheep sales. I suppose they went to great lengths to ensure those sales continued. And our sale did continue going ahead last year. We actually had it in Kilkenny Mart last year. And again, it was just purely down to COVID restrictions and space restrictions. So, but Tullamore, I suppose, is our chosen venue, and it's the location just couldn't be better in terms of kind of geographical access, like, from all corners of Ireland, I suppose. So look, you know, we were delighted that, I suppose, COVID restrictions weren't a big an issue this year. We were delighted to be back in Tullamore again, you know.
Good stuff. Eamon, thanks a million for talking to us.
They're
all there early in the morning on Saturday.
Yes, hopefully.
All right, listen, we'll talk to you again. Take care. And that is Eamon Wall from Sheep Ireland. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, It hasn't been on for 3 years. It is the Black Bull Community Thrashing Festival. Look forward to talking about that. Well, Tullamore Show is just over and we're not too far away from the ploughing. And I see that the signs are up also for Clunnasleigh Show. And of course, Mullingar was active there a little while ago. So there are always those the big events. But sometimes it's the smaller ones that you really get out to enjoy and to look forward to. And one of those that has as important a place on the local calendar as the ploughing and the Tullamore Show is the Black Bull Thrashing Festival. It's had a 3 year break and it is back. They are dusting off and taking the covers off the thrashing mill and getting the steam engine shone up and greased down, and they're all ready with the committee. And Seamus Kennedy of the committee for the Black Bull Thrashing Festival joins me on the line. Seamus, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you, Claire, for having us on. Good to be back again.
It must be good to be back again.
It's absolutely fantastic to be back. Like, we're a couple of 2 years, over 2 years old, gone over it now, and it's really a part of our lives for the last 20 years to be looking forward to the last Sunday in August for the festival. So that's brilliant. There's a great buzz around the parish and around the area. So,
and it's a proper festival. It's a proper festival. It has everything that a proper festival has to have.
Oh, it has. It has. It has a lot. Lots for everybody. But what walk of life you come from, there's lots to do and lots to see in it. And that's a real homely festival, you know. And it's run to the same way every year. And people turn out volunteers every day to help. And at the moment now we're putting up the tents and all that has nearly finished. We're ready to go on Saturday. So
yeah,
we're really looking forward to it. And the weather is a big part in it. And it looks to be going to be good.
Yeah, it's playing ball at the moment, isn't it?
It is everything.
Yeah, so some of the events that are happening, we'll take a quick run through some of the, as you say, some of the traditional kind of ones that are happening. There's the dog show with the various different prizes. There's pony and trap rides. You'll have the farm animals there, the produce stalls, which are so important. There's the lucky dip, which is always great. Racing mice, which I haven't seen for a long time and which absolutely bring me back. You'll have the butter making, the cod cannon. The target shot, split the pot, all of those things, I suppose, that we remember from the field days, I suppose, of long ago.
Oh, sure, it is. It goes back. That is what really happened at Threshers back that time, and people can reminisce over it and think over the years ago and remember this happening and watching the mill and watching the steam engines and making the butter. You know, it's all part of country life in Ireland back in the years. And it brings back memories, and younger people would never have known anything about a lot of this, only for festivals like this that really shows it off to them, you know what I mean? And they enjoy it as well, so it's absolutely brilliant, you know.
Tell us a little bit about the thrashing mill itself.
The thrashing mill is owned by a neighbour up the road, Michael O'Toole here. He has it there. It's a Marshall thrashing mill, and it's run by a major tractor powers it, and the boys there have all the palm cut, the oats is on the trailer, everything is ready to go on. That's part of life years ago in rural Ireland, and the messing that went on in the straw and picking straw and things of another, that still goes on in our fashion. And, you know, people enjoy the laugh and the fun of it and sit down there and reminisce over with neighbours and friends and bring back memories, great memories.
Yeah, and of course events like this don't happen without the committee, but also I know you're mentioning John Grant and Ray Dempsey and Jim O'Mara and their families and Philip Draper, all involved in that end of it as well.
Oh, there is. It's a tremendous turnout from all different people around the parish. They're all brilliant. And this year as well, now we have a little different event in it. We have a lot of music coming this year and have some very renowned players. We have Aisling Rafferty, who is the winner of the Glen Tree and T.G. Cahir.
Yeah.
She won the All-Ireland there. She's playing. And we have Maura Brennan won the All-Ireland Senior Tin Whistle Championship at the Flagfield. We also have our own Abby Walsh, who won the World Championship in Irish dancing, World Championship now, not Ireland. She's the World Champion. And we have the dancing there for people who want to dance on the floor. And then later in the day, we have the Buckleys from our neighbours from Kilcoma, Killahi, coming up to play. And in between all that, Rock and Paddy will be keeping the show on the road. So there's lots for everybody to see and enjoy.
Yeah.
And we also have a cooking competition this year for anyone who makes scones and tarts and brown bread.
And we have
a photo competition. So there's lots of varieties for everybody to see, you know.
And the photo competition is interesting because you're asking people in the locality to take take pictures of the locality and enter those in. So there'll probably be time to be getting that done, or maybe looking through the phone and seeing if they have pictures that they might like to enter.
Yeah, that's what that is. Yeah, even and the older the better. If we go back years,
okay,
and bring up photos from five and days, you know, even of original trashings or something like that. All that will be taken into the viewing, and it'll be a winner at the end of the day. So that'll be very interesting.
You have the Lord and the Lady of the Trashing.
That's correct. Yeah, every year we have the Lord and the Lady of the Trashing, and this year we have Deborah Standage and Kevin Brady. They're stepping in to do that. So they'll arrive on the gate to open the proceedings around 12:30. So looking forward to that as well.
Yeah. I mentioned the butter making and the cod cannon making. Well, one of my favourite things is the griddle bread. There is nothing like griddle bread. Three ingredients in it. And it is I suppose you need the butter on it too, don't you?
The butter, and if you want to make a nice raspberry jam or something, goes well with it as well. So, yeah. But it is very nice, and it's something that's done there on site and over an open fire. And you can test it there when it's hot coming off the griddle. It's absolutely fantastic. You know, great taste off it. And people queue up for it.
Yeah,
as well as to do for our Clare Cannon, which is renowned now. Everybody has a secret for making Clare Cannon.
They do.
I think we have the biggest secret. So we're top class at that. Ladies and gentlemen,
And I suppose there will be people who will never have seen butter made before unless they've seen it on the internet. They'll never have seen griddle bread being made.
No, they wouldn't. You know, and it's surprising. No, they wouldn't. A lot of people never know. And even I remember on one occasion, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I was watching the Trashy Mill. A little girl about 10 and her father was watching, and she says, "Daddy, where's the flour come out?" She thought the Trashy Mill had actually made the flour.
Okay.
And I didn't have to be going to the miller. And, you know, simple little things that we take for granted, the younger people don't know about, you know. So it's great to have education for them.
And the thatched house, tell me about that. It has a haggard and it has the animals.
Oh, yeah, we have a thatched house that we're married, and it's a thatched house there, and it's kitted out with the old-style fireplace and all the old utensils in it and pots and pans. And then we have the pet, a dog built into the area, and the pet farm around. We have the geese and the hens and the chickens and the ducks. Everything is there for people to see, and the kids look forward to that. And beside that, then we also have a little playpen there where the smaller kids can go in to play and do their different things and do a bit of colouring and all of that, and the parents can sit down and enjoy the day without having to worry about them.
Yeah.
They can't get away as the last person in there.
Very important. The fencing is
and
good.
Then on the night we have a raffle, which is a very good money spinner for the bull calf. You know, like, where would you get a bull calf in Ireland for €2? So that's a great thing. And then around 1:30 we also finish off with we have an auction, and we have a lot of stuff for sale in the auction. We have timber and sheep and turf, straw, hay, so something for everybody.
Something for everybody, and it's just so fantastic that you're back and up and running again. Seamus, thanks a million for talking to us. It's on Sunday the 28th from kind of lunchtime onwards. And
yes,
they, I'll just call out.
Onwards.
I have the address for it. The air code is R42E781. That's R42E781. It's at Sharavogue, and well worth a visit. Seamus, thanks a million for talking to us on the programme this evening. Have a wonderful day on Sunday.
Thanks very much, there, and Radio 3 for always being great supporters. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. It's important. It's important to remember events like this. Thank you to all my guests this evening. Thank you for the pleasure of your company, whether you're listening on Wednesday evening or on the weekend. MJ will be back next week. I'll see you probably again this time next year. Till then, take care. Good night.